It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena. Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
I'm very good, thank you, apart from an accident on the motorway that meant that it took me an hour and 40 minutes to get into work.
Crikey.
Which is never good. Yeah.
Well, that kind of fits nicely with one of the topics we want to talk about today, which is a little bit about our urban planning. We have discussed this a little bit in the past and about the government's sort of broader schemes for how development in Auckland is going to work. And we're seeing a bit of conversation at the moment about our zoning and particularly the heritage zoning and the single story zoning around a lot of our central suburbs, and some pushback from councillors in the south who are saying, you know, it's really great to have buildings going up, but we need the infrastructure that gets people into the cities too. What is happening in terms of the conversation in council at the moment about our zoning, thinking about the development of our city moving forward?
Well, back in 2016 we passed the unitary plan, which allowed the city to move both up and out, because we knew that the restrictive zoning was forcing up the price of houses at the time and creating a major housing shortage. So a lot of what we needed to do we did in the unitary plan, but the government now, and it's really consistent with what council's thinking is, also believes that we need to go further in focusing more and more on brownfield housing, that is housing development in existing urban areas. And actually about, you know, two-thirds of our housing, our building consents now are for intensive housing, that's terrace housing, apartment buildings, etc. What they've done in the National Policy Statement on Urban Development, they've said there are three areas where you need to have a minimum, and this is a minimum of six stories. One of them is in the city centre, and at the moment we have no restriction on the city centre, so I'm looking out the window at the Pacifica building, which must be about 39 stories high. Secondly, in the 10 metropolitan centres around Auckland, again, a minimum of six-storey building zoning. Mm. You don't have to build to six stories, but we have to zone to allow a minimum of six stories. And then, which is the interesting one, I think, is a minimum of six stories within walkable catchments around existing and planned rapid transit stops. And this is going to be relevant to both CRL and to the light rail. So what's happened overseas is that you build intensively around where you can get ready access to transport. And I think ours is within 800 metres of a rapid transit hub or stop. We will be required to zone up to a minimum of six stories. And where the conflict comes in, I think, is that some of the areas that will be covered by that zoning are what are called special character areas because of their heritage. And the challenge is to find the balance between preserving the best of your heritage but still allowing more intensive housing, because you only have to listen to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change this morning to understand we've got to pull out just about every stop in order to reduce our carbon emissions. And a more compact urban design and reliance on public transport are two critical factors in achieving that.
So how do we get past this problem? Because we obviously, want to preserve heritage sites, but what actually is a heritage site in Auckland? You know, we're seeing quite a bit of discussion from urban planners about how overseas a heritage building is much older than what we have here, our colonial history being shorter. But what actually is that particular conversation looking like at the moment? How do we sort of class a heritage building, and how do we make sure that we're not going to end up in a Wellington situation where we have quite, mouldy, rubbishy housing stock being sort of listed as heritage and then getting in the way of this medium density housing that you're talking about?
The heritage listings are relatively small, but what covers a much larger area are what's called special character areas. A lot of the villas in Ponsonby and Herne Bay and around that way would be covered, or out in Howick, for example, covered as a special character area. Now, what we're doing on that, the government says that we must allow for greater intensification, but it does allow us some discretion. But what we need to do to meet the government guidelines is just look at the best of the buildings in the special character areas and not every building because they happen to be in there. And I know the debate that's going on in Wellington. You know, I quite like the look of some of the old double-storey villas down there, but talking to students who flatten them, they say they're hell to live in, they're appalling. But it is trying to say, let's try and keep the best of our heritage, but at the same time, look, we are becoming a city that will soon be 2 million people, and, you know, 30 years after that will be, you know, 3 million people. Mm. We have to intensify. So like most things in life, it's trying to get that balance right, protect the best, allow intensification in all other areas where you're not looking after something that is absolutely worth preserving as something that represents our history and our heritage.
Well, obviously, related to all of this is the infrastructure and the transport network. I'm interested in Fesso Collins this week has been calling for free public transport. This is across the board to address fairness across the city's transport system. This is coming out of the back of a government report that shows there's big inequalities and inequities in the people who have to do shift work or who do particular types of jobs that require them travelling far across the city. This is cleaners and other services like that. What is the council's position? Is free public transport something that we're ever going to see in Tamaki Makaurau, or are there other options that the government, the central local government, is looking at the moment? What's happening there?
Yeah. Well, look, there are two big issues in this. Firstly, free public transport would mean that I could travel free on public transport, despite the fact I don't need a subsidy because I earn quite enough to be able to pay for my transport myself. I'd much rather have a targeted system of cutting transport costs, and that's what we're doing with Community Connect. Probably from next year, where there'll be a 50% discount offered to 200,000 people who are eligible for a community services card. And you know, I think that you start off by trying to reduce the cost to the most vulnerable. I'd like to see perhaps that come down to ultimately being free, and I'd quite like to see those that are eligible for the bigger subsidy on public transport, the 50% cut in the normal fares, go to a wider group who are maybe earning a bit more than would allow them to be eligible for a community services card, but are still low income earners. The big trade-off, the second point is the big trade-off is you could make public transport free, and you know, in theoretical terms, that would be a very desirable thing to do, but that would cost about $200 or $300 million a year in foregone income. And what the report that we had done it's at the end of 2019, when we looked at this, it said the international best practice is actually the way to get more people on public transport is less by providing free public transport than it is improving the quality of the service. And there is a trade-off. If you forego income of $200 or $300 million, that's money that you don't have to improve the amount of public transport and the quality of the public transport that you provide. So there is a trade-off between those two. Again, I'd find balance in it. I'd say let's begin by lowering costs. You know, with free weekend travel for kids, for example, which we've already done. We've got a discount
but for people who students. Need. For people who need this, you know, right now, what provisions is the council putting in place to ensure that those low-income earners that you mentioned there and people who are in these difficult situations?
Community Connect. We're working right now on Community Connect, which was part of the ATAP process, which we've just finished this year. As soon as we've got all the preparation done for that, it'll be introduced and no later than July next year. So that means an immediate 50% cut in your public transport fees for our lowest income people, our most vulnerable, and there are about 200,000 that come into that category.
So we already do have free public transport for some, you know, big groups, and this is from central government with obviously gold cards.
Yeah.
And is this something that you think we could see perhaps some support from central government for funding lower income earners into a cheaper form of transport or a free form of transport to get around?
Yeah, well, I hope so. Council put some money into extending the period of time that senior citizens get public transport for, so we subsidise they can travel during the late afternoon that's not covered by the gold card. The problem with the gold card, and nobody's ever going to change it, but the problem is that it applies to everybody, and there are people that are senior citizens that really need that help, and there are people who are senior citizens that are, you know, really well off. So that isn't a targeted scheme. What we're looking at doing is providing a targeted scheme for people at the other end of the scale in terms of income, those that need it most, and I think that's the appropriate way to go.
Well, let's talk very briefly about film in Auckland. We've seen a big amount of funding, $35 million funding boost for Auckland Film Studios. This is something that you've been welcoming. What do you feel is going to be the outcome of this? Is this going to be something that is a boon to the economy here in Auckland?
Oh, absolutely. Look, our screen industry, I don't think most Aucklanders realise it, our screen production industry is hugely valuable to the city. It's worth over $1 billion in income to the city, and it employs over 4,000 people and generally well high-skilled and high-paid jobs. What this extra money, and it comes from the COVID recovery scheme, the $30 million from government will enable us to do with a bit of money from council, is to create two new sound stages and some other buildings that will allow us to expand the number of permanent jobs created in the film industry by about 300 and bring hundreds of millions of dollars more in income to the city. At the moment, we can't meet up the demand from companies wanting to film to film productions in Auckland. So we're short of studio space. We've got studios in Henderson. We've got them in Cumeu. We've got other studios that are run privately out in South Auckland. But we can't keep up with demand. If we expand those facilities, then we can attract more and more people to create films here. You know, we're doing big things like Lord of the Rings at the moment, and the Auckland Film Studios, you know, goes way back to the days of Xena Warrior Princess. They've done some fantastic films. It is a growing industry. It does employ not only those involved in the direct film production work, but lots of different trades and businesses around the city that make the sets and provide the services to the film industry. So it's great for the city. It's a high-paid, high-skilled area, and that's the sort of area that we want to expand as part of Auckland's economy.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. It's always great to have you on the show. We really appreciate it. We will see you again next Tuesday. Have a good week until then.
Okay, thanks, Rachel. Mā te wā.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank